This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Payne and Pendergast and Casario. For the upcoming segment here. Good to be with you on a Thursday. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne, and if you know that music's playing, it is can mean only one thing on this show. The walkout music for Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Casario. Nick, welcome in. Great to talk to you as always. And now that I'm hearing that music, I think this is the first time we talked to you since you've become best friends with Triple H.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having it. Yeah, no, exactly. I had an opportunity to introduce myself at the Sloan Conference. He was on a panel with the Netflix chief content officer. Actually, a great discussion about how they've transitioned from to live programming on Netflix. And then after, I said, look, I got to at least go up to him and say hello and introduce myself. Told him that I have walkout music when I go on a show with Payne and Pendergast in the morning. And he said, wow, that's a good choice. So we got a little kick out of that. So okay. That was a lot of fun. So it was great to meet. He thinks I'm a lunatic, but I mean, that's okay.
That's good. I'm totally jealous, of course, obviously.
Yeah, there's no room for lunatics in his business. He's probably really, really put out by it.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised he didn't book you for a match at WrestleMania.
He actually did invite me to the next WWE event in Houston. So whether or not I actually take him up on that offer, we'll see. Okay, but he did extend the invitation, so maybe you, two of you can go in my place, and you'll probably have a lot more fun than I would have.
What do you do if they approach one of your players? Like, it seems like Will Anderson would probably be a good candidate to be a part of the show. Like, what's the process there? Do you hammer out a contract with the player and WWE is like what he's allowed to do and not do?
The contract is don't do anything dumb. Yeah. So if you want to make an appearance ringside, that's probably about the extent of the contractual discussion.
So you just like push somebody or something, but no getting pushed.
Yeah. Because George Kittle's been a part of it. There's a few guys that have been a part.
Been a few. Yeah, exactly. Let's stay away from Hell in a Cell. Don't be jumping off like Mick Foley. Can't do anything like that. So
I'm curious, Nick, and we'll get into the offseason and whatnot here in just a second. I am curious. You go into the Sloan Analytics Conference obviously seems like something that's right up your alley from a football standpoint.
It's like a concert. They got groupies.
Yeah, probably. So,
yeah. like that groupie in Real Genius.
Perfectly there.
The MIT nerds. What do you walk away from something like that with that helps you from a football standpoint as a GM?
No, it's interesting. And I think I have a really good relationship with Jess Gelman, who the CEO of Kraft Sports Group. Her and Daryl Morey actually started the conference a number of years ago. Obviously, the Houston fans are familiar with Daryl and his time here in Houston. So more than anything, it's really a think tank, and they bring in different people from different lines of work, business, sport, entertainment, and it's just some idea generation. It's designed for the MIT students and then some other students as well. It's an opportunity for them to kind of listen and learn to some different folks in some different industries. Because of my relationship with Jess, I'm always open to just having those dialogues and discussion. The panel I was on this year I was actually on a panel with Daryl and David Stearns, the GM of the Mets, who's done a really good job, not only his time with the Mets here in a short period of time, but Milwaukee as well. And it's really, it's very organic. You usually have a panel, there might be a topic. And it's just you're listening for some ideas, some interesting thoughts. I thought the panel, in all seriousness, with Triple H and Bella was really interesting, how they've grown their product, how it's interesting the number of women fans that are engaged and interested in wrestling. And not to go like WWE here, but they talked about the Cena heel turn and how the response instantly on the social media, on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, was it led to X number of followers, so it just got more eyeballs to sport. And in the end, it's all about entertainment, but just talked about how they've grown, how they've kind of transitioned going from USA to Netflix and live element. So listen to that. I listened to another panel. Had two folks that were involved in private equity that are investors in businesses, in soccer. And more than anything, you're just looking for thoughts. It's no different than the league meetings here. You know, the first night they had Caitlin Clark, Eli, and Serena just talk about, I would say, their experience, some of the things that they're doing, their involvement in sport, their investors in a multitude of different sports. Even you could look at JJ, what he's done investing in soccer overseas. So more than anything, when you get an opportunity to just listen and be a part of groups and panels like this, maybe there's something that you take and that you can apply. There's a lot smarter people there than I am, so I just go to try to listen and learn. And out of my respect and my relationship with Jess, that's really one of the reasons that I do it.
Mm. You know, it's actually, Nick, something related that we were talking about earlier is about these torpedo bats, which I'm guessing you've heard of the torpedo bats.
Briefly, I'm not as educated as you all are on it, but sounds like it's a hot topic.
I've got a lathe in my shop that I'm working on my own version on. So, what we were talking about was just how hard it is that there's so many things going on the analytical side of things or on the technology side of things in sports now that one of the hardest challenges is actually just figuring out which ones you're going to use. And because I was sticking up for Espada not knowing about the torpedo bats, because it's like you get presented with a dozen things a day that's going to revolutionize the sport. And it comes down to the organization, in my opinion, to really have a system for analyzing these things. So when you're looking at the analytical side of things, and you guys have an analytics department like most teams, how do you go about that part of it? Like figuring out, all right, we've got limited time and only so many resources, like, and we got to be ready. We got to have an offense ready here in a couple of months. Like, how do you pick what you're going to lean into?
No, it's a great question. And I think the point that you make, Seth, the reality is things are moving fast. Things are constantly changing. Things are constantly evolving. And more than anything, you just want to make sure you have some awareness of what's going on. And then you're looking, is there something out there that there's a useful application that we can actually incorporate into some of the things that we're doing? And the reality is you can't use everything. It's a law of diminishing returns if you try to do too much. But if there's a specific, I would say, piece of technology or some information that you might be able to apply in along with your process that you have in place, then you investigate it. And you see if there's a fit, there's utility, great. If there's not, then you move on to something else. But to your point, the rate of change that takes place, it happens at such a high rate of speed. So you have to be aware, you have to be cognizant, which I would say a conference like the one that I attended, it gives you kind of some insight as to some of the things that are going on. But I would say philosophically, it usually goes back to basic blocking and tackling and first principles. And then you're looking for things on the periphery that you might be able to bring into your organization that you might be able to apply. So whether that's in coaching, whether it's in scouting, whether it's in sports performance, whether it's in the medical area, I would say we've talked at different points about the medical arena. Like, that's an area that's constantly changing and evolving. So from ACL, reconstruction, the surgery, the rehab associated with it. There's just a myriad of things that are out there. So I think you have to be smart and disciplined with how you approach it and just realize you can't be a part of everything. But organizationally, you're always looking for some things on the margins that maybe we can incorporate. And the reality is, professional sports is as competitive as anything. So you're looking for things that potentially could provide you some competitive advantage that you might be able to incorporate and apply to your system that's currently in place.
I'm glad you mentioned the medical part of it, because Trent Brown, obviously an interesting signing, but he's coming off a patellar tendon tear. And there's not a whole lot of data on guys coming back from patellar tendon tears. It's just not that common an injury. So what do you, like, has that changed at all? Are patellar tendons not as dramatic as they used to be, or is it still a huge wild card?
Injuries are always a wild card. I think you can never really predict. It's all about the athlete response rate. And so what we try to do, whether they're healthy, not healthy, is when they come in the building, it's just going to kind of get a baseline understanding of where they are. So from their weight, from their imbalance, is there an asymmetry right leg to left leg? Is there a specific area that we can focus their training on? And I'd say you can build the training. I think where you've seen the biggest growth and evolution is in the customization of training relative to the individual athlete. It used to be, and we were all a part of this, you walk in a weight room, you get handed a card, and everybody kind of does the same program. Well, I would say over time that's kind of changed, because every athlete has different needs. Their body responds differently. What they're asked to do on the field is different, so you want to be able to train accordingly. Are there certain things that you're going to do with everybody? Yes. Are there other things that you're going to do that are specific to the athlete? And that's what I would say specific to the Texans. Our return to football, our return to play group, we can focus specifically on the individual rehab for that specific player. And then once they graduate from that, then they hand them off, or they get handed off, and then we incorporate back into football, we just want to make sure that they're fully mentally and physically prepared for the rigors of what they're going to endure. So I would say it still goes back to case by case. Some injuries are harder to come back by than others, but it's all about how does the athlete respond to the injury. And that goes back to the training. It goes back to the program that you could develop. And you can, the technology that's available enables you to measure this, so we can have the information and just try to make a good decision about each player and their overall health and performance.
Go ahead, Sean.
Okay, yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Texans GM Nick Caserio joining us. Hey, Nick, just to start digging into the offseason here, and we'll start with the offensive line. Seth mentioned Trent Brown there. Obviously, a lot of new faces on the offensive line. You made the trade involving Laremy Tunsil, changes with coaching on the offensive line. What specifically are you trying to find that was missing from last year's offensive line room?
Right to the offense. I thought we were going to transition to the Rockets and talk about their playoff berth, but no, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Congratulations to them.
Yeah.
No, there's never anything specific. I think what you try to do is after each season, you kind of take a step back, make an evaluation. All right, what happened? Is there anything that we feel that we need to do moving forward? And there's going to be change. We've talked about this on this show. Your team's going to turn over X number of percent each year. So every situation, you kind of evaluate case by case. I don't think we went to the offseason and said, well, we're going to do A, B, C, and D. That's never really how it works. What you have to do is just kind of take inventory of where you are and try to take advantage of the opportunities as they present themselves. So in the Laremy situation, that was something that, you know, we weren't certainly intent on doing or that we were motivated to do. I think when we just looked at the situation, we felt that it was the opportunity in front of us that made sense. Washington had a need, and then we consummated the trade. And, you know, ultimately we felt like that was the best decision for the Texans at that particular time. So I think you always know going to the offseason, you're going to add players. There are going to be some players that go on and off the team. There are going to be some players that go on and off the roster. We made, I would say, changes offensively from Coach Kaley to Coach Popovich. So from the coordinator to the offensive line. So that's kind of step one. There's going to be personnel changes that take place. We've seen a number of changes that have taken place across the entire team, not just the offensive line. So I think the big thing that we've talked about and D'Amico and I are focused on is just trying to carry as much competition on a team as possible. And in the end, it's going to come down to how well we execute on Sunday. So we're a long way from that. It's April 3rd. Where we end up beginning of September, whatever the first game is, nobody really knows. But, you know, we felt the way we're positioned right now, we have a number of players on the offensive line with varying levels of experience that have played a lot of football, including some of the players that are returning on our team. Obviously, the players that we brought on externally have played a lot of football. How it all transpires and how it all sorts itself out, TBD, So, but, you know, we feel like we're in a decent spot right now. And I think the big thing is just being able to go out there and get the five best guys on the field, you know, bring eight to the game, but get the five best guys that are out there. And hopefully we can go out there and just play good football and execute on a consistent basis. So there were times as a team, I would say, not just specific to the offensive line, as a team, did a number of really good things last year. There were other areas that, you know, we probably could have done a little bit better. So that's where, you know, it's a year-to-year league. And your team's going to change, and we're no different than any other team.
You know, and DeMeco, when he's talked about the offensive line or the offense in general a couple times this offseason, he's mentioned the importance of having one voice in the offensive line room. And he's also mentioned how with Kaylee and with Cole Popovich having a relationship before, that they're kind of on the same page already with a lot of things. Was there an element... And I'm honestly not trying to throw any one guy under the bus here or anything, but with the offense in its entirety over the last couple years, were there some instances where maybe you just had an offensive line coach and an offensive coordinator and perhaps a player or whomever else, where they weren't seeing things through the same filter, or they just didn't have the same common background, that it wasn't as seamless as you would hope it would be?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for DeMeco, but I mean, you know, there's always a lot of communication that takes place. It's never one particular thing. So in the end, going back to when we made the decision, when DeMeco made the decision that he did to move on from Bobby, certainly was an easy decision. So, you know, what we're trying to do is put together what we think is the best situation or the best formula. And honestly, Seth, nobody really knows how it's going to go. Like, I can't sit here and tell you exactly how it's going to go. So I'd say the fact that Nick and Cole have some level of experience together, I mean, it always helps when any time that you have an opportunity to work with one another. And again, it's under different systems. So there's going to be an element of we're going to have to work through some things in the off season. And that's what March and April are designed for. Coaching staff get together. How are we going to call things? How do you see things? We're going to use this terminology. Okay, when this situation comes up, we're going to handle it this way. And there's going to be some back and forth. So again, like, we've won 20 games over the last 2 years. So, like, a lot of things that we were doing, you know, couldn't have been all that bad. So, but, you know, we're just trying to figure out, like, all right, what's the best thing for the Texans? What do we think we got to do moving forward? Which is where we are right now. What is that going to mean? Honestly, I don't have the answers. None of us have the answers. Anybody that says they have the answers is probably lying to you. So I think we'll work through it here. We'll try to have a good off season. You know, try to get the players, let's say, in good condition. And then once we get to training camp, obviously we're going to have more information. We're going to have a better idea of where we are. And the whole goal is to just make sure that we're as prepared as we possibly can be for whoever the opponent is week one.
Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. So, Nick, you get the deal done with Derek Stingley Jr. You get the deal done with Danielle Hunter to add another year to his deal. Obviously, Nico last year. Am I being presumptuous to say that you pretty much laid out the blueprint for getting an extension from the Houston Texans if you're a good football player? And if so, what is that blueprint?
Good player, good attitude. Go out there, be productive, work hard, put the team first, and, you know, you'll be rewarded. And again, it's not just those three specific players,
sure.
But I think when you look at the overall composition of the team, and the mindset, and DeMeco has talked about this, what are the things that we're looking for? What do we prioritize? Like, those three players are pretty good examples of what a Houston Texan football player should look like, or what we want it to look like. Understanding every player is different. Everyone has strengths. Everyone has areas that they can improve. But those three players in particular are three of our better players. We feel like we're pretty fortunate that we have a lot of good football players on this team, in this building. And again, going back to what I said a little bit earlier, everything is kind of case by case. So we'll look at it. We'll have discussions. DeMeco and I talk about the team, I don't want to say every day, not every day, but it's every day. And we're just trying to make sure that we're very thoughtful and we do things with the right intentions. And, you know, those players, they earn mm-hmm. what they receive. We don't give out anything. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't like, okay, come in here and we're just going to give you. You get what you earn, and the contracts are the contracts, and every situation is going to be a little bit different. But those players have earned what they received because of, A, their play, how they play, B, the type of people that they are, C, their work ethic, their overall mindset. I mean, Stingley was in here the day that we agreed. He was in a weight room, and we're in the offseason. We're not even in the offseason program yet, but I think when you speak to the mindset and the type of people that we want to have on this football team, we've had almost 30 players in the building since the end of the season that are training 4 or 5 times a week. And the offseason program hasn't even started, and including Stingley is one of those players. So Stingley was in there, Bullock was in there, Kamari Lassiter was in there. We've had a number. Petrie's been here basically since the end of the season. So that speaks to, if you show up, if you work hard, we have all the resources that you need here in the building. Like, you don't have to go anywhere else. Now, obviously, some people are more advanced in some of their training. I would say, you know, I think there's some videos of Daniil working out. Like, Daniil's working. Like, you don't look like he does without putting in the work. So, you know, that's the type of a program that we're trying to create, and it starts at the top. And, you know, we try to be very consistent and very committed. And honestly, it takes a certain amount of discipline, because we're not afraid to say, okay, here's, you know, we'll talk about the draft here in a minute, but there's players in a draft where we're going to move on from, or they're not going to, we're not going to consider them to be a part of our program. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. It just means, you know what, they might be a better fit somewhere else, and that's okay, and that's just part of our process. Does it mean we're going to be right all the time? Absolutely not. But we're just trying to be as consistent as possible on the way, and committed and disciplined to our approach, because we feel that's the right approach for our team. And it's something that D'Amico and I believe strongly in. So as a result, we're going to make sure we try to find those players that fit and understand the mindset that we want them to play with and you know, perform on a day-to-day basis.
Nick, I have a follow-up on Jalen Petrie in a second, but I'm curious, just for some perspective, you said there's 30 players in the building right now working out, and the offseason program hasn't even started yet. From your experience, what's a normal number that's in the building like that, for some perspective on that number?
Not that many.
Yeah.
And again, this is actually kind of an off week, and this week is, you know, league meetings, and, you know, coaches are off here this week, and this is kind of an off week. But I would say, just anecdotally, players who we signed in the off season have made comments that on other teams that they've been affiliated with, that they've never really seen anything like this. Just unsolicited offering that up, which is good to hear. So it speaks to the players. It speaks to our sports performance staff. It speaks to the people that are working with the players on a day-to-day basis. I would say not that many. You'll probably get, I would say, anywhere from maybe 10 to 12 to 15 in kind of this dead period. So from basically call it February and March, or whenever your season ends, everybody's kind of on their own. Typically, the off season starts in April. Our off season program officially starts April 21, and the first 2 weeks are just with the strength and conditioning staff. The coaches really aren't involved in that. So, again, can't speak to necessarily what goes on in other buildings. I would say, even going back to our time in New England, we had a decent amount of players around, but not the volume that we have here. I'd say it's a confluence of events. A lot of people live in Houston or kind of around here. B, they want to be in the building because we have the resources available to them. And see, like, they understand, like, in order to improve, and I've talked about this, if you want to get better at football, you have to work and work at football. So right now, the off season, what can you do to improve? It's your strength conditioning. It's your power. It's your overall development. Rookies, as an example, Bullock and Lassiter have been here. They didn't have an off season program. So this is really their first opportunity to train with our staff on a kind of off-season type of cadence. So the players are here. It speaks to who they are. It speaks to their willingness and want to get better. And we encourage them to be there because we have everything that they need at their fingertips. So other players, if they want to go elsewhere, that's okay. It doesn't mean they're not working, like I said. But to have that number of players in the building, you know, it's a credit to them and really our strength and conditioning and our sports performance staff that they want to be here.
You could publish the list of guys in the building. That would be great. That would really help us with our hot takes.
We'll put that on our social media.
These are the guys that want it. These are the swarmiest guys. They're in the building.
The opposite of that was Sam Montgomery at LSU.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Hey, Nick, just to follow up about Jalen, you talked about the contract extensions. Obviously, Jalen is eligible for one. He's 3 years in now, and I know how much you guys how much you value Jalen Petrie. Is he on the radar right now, possibly to be extended this offseason?
Yeah, I'd say we're having conversations with a number of players, and you know, we've talked about this. You guys kind of know how we operate. Mm-hmm. Like, we're pretty flexible and open minded. Like, we don't have a finite, well, if, you know, we don't get it done by September 1st and it's off the table. I think at some point, for everybody's best interest, you might say, hey, look, let's try to figure this out, you know, over the next few weeks and or whenever. We've done things in the offseason. We've done things kind of over the summer or in training camp. We've done a few during the season. So we'll maintain some flexibility. Always open to having discussions and dialogue, whether or not an agreement, you know, comes to fruition. It's very situationally based and case by case. So, but I would say there's a number of players that you'd like to keep as many good players and good people around this building for as long as possible. And if we get to that point, great. If we don't, it doesn't necessarily mean it won't work out. It just might means it means it might happen just at a later point. Mm-hmm. So, don't really want to comment specifically on any individual discussions with any players, but I would say always open-minded to having a dialogue with the player and their representatives and trying to figure out an agreement that everybody feels comfortable with, because the goal is for both entities and both parties to be happy with how it went. You don't want to have, you know, we're not trying to quote-unquote win a negotiation. Yeah. We don't believe in that. That's not how we operate. You want something where the organization wins and the player feels valued and they feel like, you know, you've made them a priority. So, you know, we'll work through those things. But Jalen's been a good player. It's the day he walked in the building. He's had a significant impact on our program. You know, that's the type of player that you'd like to have around here as long as possible. So we'll kind of see how all that works itself out.
You know, you had mentioned that Derek Stingley was in working out the day that he got that extension, and it's always I remember Tom Coughlin being over the moon when a guy who was a late round draft pick, after a few years they redid his deal, and he was in there working out early in the morning before the OTAs or before the offseason program started, and the head athletic trainer told me that Coughlin was just so excited to hear that guy was in the room that morning that he had signed his contract. But I guess the one thing that's changed since 15-20 years ago is that now even the late round draft picks, if they've played 3 or 4 years in the league, they've made some pretty damn good money. Do you have to worry less now, maybe, because you've got a good track record of, okay, Derek Stingley, he's already made $20 million in his career. If the money was going to ruin him, it would have ruined him long ago, or if that was the only thing motivating him. So is there a little bit more comfort level in giving contracts now because guys through that or through NIL have already established, like, okay, that they can keep their head about them when they've got a big wad of cash in their pocket?
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, what's going on in college football is sort of changed over the last 2 to 3 years. So some players are more equipped to handle the money than others. But it works both ways, Seth. Even if you're getting paid in college, then you might think, well, everything that took place in college is going to happen here in the NFL. I would just say, players are motivated. Obviously, they want to be compensated for what they do, but they also want to win. And if we've done a good enough job on the front end of bringing the right type of people with the right mentality and mindset into this building, then you're going to feel comfortable giving that player what he's earned, going back to what we talked about a little bit earlier. So in the end, you still have to go out there and perform, and you have a certain comfort level because in a lot of cases, you know, you're probably financially secure for a long period of time, which all of us, whatever we do, when we invest a significant amount of time and energy, you want to be compensated accordingly, and you want to put yourself in a position, you know, where you have a certain level of security, and there's nothing wrong with that. But by the same token, in the end, we still have to go out there, we still have a job to do, we still have to play good football, and we want to win, because that's ultimately, you know, when the team wins, kind of everybody wins. So again, not sure if that exactly answers your question, but I would say we're not necessarily worried about, you know, when we reward a player with something that he's earned, that he's necessarily going to change. I would say let's go back and talk about Nico Collins. So I'd say Nico probably had his best offseason last year, and, you know, he was coming on the heels of a contract extension. So I think it's really confirmation that, you know what, okay, we think we made the right decision and rewarded a player because he earned the opportunity with his performance, and it's not necessarily going to change his thought process or mindset. So, if you find the right players, you find the right people with the right mentality and the right mindset, get them in the building, then, and keep them in the building and build your team accordingly, then that's ultimately where we want to be.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea.
True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Texans GM Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. You're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, an Odyssey sports station. Nick, the CJ Gardner-Johnson deal, how did that come about? And in general with these deals, you've done three of these now where it looks like a team may be getting rid of a guy, but it turns into a trade. Joe Mixon last year and Christian Kirk and CJ Gardner-Johnson obviously this year. Can you speak to that specific deal and just in general that kind of niche in the market that you've been able to bring in good players through?
Yeah, I think teams that know how we operate know that we'll basically listen. And people in our position, in my position, you're always having conversation. You're always talking to the equivalent on the other team, not just during free agency, but all throughout the year. Hey, what's going on? Hey, anything going on? Any players that potentially we should look at? Anything? Are you looking for anything? So there's a healthy dialogue going back and forth. I would say specific to CJ, say Howie and I have a really good relationship. We've done a lot of deals together. So, you know, when those conversations take place, they honestly really don't take too long. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a relationship business in the end, and we're not afraid to talk to anybody. So, you know, even the situation going back to Kirk. So, you know, James and I didn't really know each other, haven't worked together, but, you know, we're pretty open-minded here. Like, we'll work with anybody. We'll kind of get kind of straight to the point, hey, and just try to have some open dialogue. And that's part of the responsibility in the chair in which I sit, is you want to be open. You can't be if, and what's the worst the thing that somebody can say? It's no. Okay, mm-hmm. No problem. Then you move on to the next thing. So you never take it personally, but, you know, Howie and I have always had a lot of good discussions, a lot of good dialogue. We're not afraid to do deals. We kind of go back and forth. And this one happened to work itself out the way it did. You know, and we'll see how CJ's been a good player. He's had a positive impact on a couple of different programs. He's been really productive with his opportunities. So, I mean, that's all we care about is when a player walks in the building, is just come in here, do the things that, you know, D'Amico asks of you as a player, be a good teammate and go out there and play good football. So, you know, we think CJ can help us in the secondary, which is why we made the acquisition that we did.
When you talk about the trade for Christian Kirk, without, like, with trading within the division, when you've got a new GM in the division, how do you go about figuring out whether that guy's going to do business with you or not? Do you just like, does somebody usually say it explicitly, or is it a matter of you might approach him a couple times and they keep saying no or don't even have a discussion with you and you pick up on the signals? It feels like it could be awkward.
Yeah, I would say you never make it personal. let's even, you know, with Mike Borgonzi in Tennessee. So, you know, Mike and I have a good relationship. Mike and I have had multiple conversations when he was the Chiefs. And really on the front end of it, you know, whether or not it's, this is just how I kind of operate. You know, I talked to Mike, hey, Mike, congratulations, you know, looking forward to working with you. You know, we're open-minded here. I would say that whole notion, Seth, of, okay, if you trade in the division, look, it's some of it is a little bit of a myth. So, I mean, you're either going to do business with people or you're not, and you can't be afraid of what the repercussions are, what the fan base might think. Oh, you can't do that because it's going to have a negative effect. Everybody just has to run their team how they see fit and just make the decisions that they feel are in their best interest. And we're going to work with each other over the course of a number of years. So maybe that person, okay, he's in Tennessee, then however many years down the road, maybe he is in the AFC West. So if you didn't handle yourself, you know, with professionalism and courtesy and respect, like that travels with you. So it's no different than when you're dealing with agents. So this is why, this is from a personal standpoint, I try not to make anything personal or make it contentious because it's not worth it. Like we're pretty, I'm a pretty straight shooter, very matter of fact, kind of get to the point. I think people understand that about me, right, wrong, or indifferent. So we're not opposed to doing anything that we feel is going to help the Houston Texans, because that's ultimately the fiduciary responsibility that we have, that I have to D'Amico and to the McNair family, is to do what I think is in the best interest of the Houston Texans, not what's in the best interest of me personally. So when it comes to doing trades, we'll trade with anybody. Now, are there some people that take the opposite approach, that we're not going to trade with you because you're in their division? Yeah, that's their personal preference or personal choice. I can't control how somebody else thinks. All we can do is just try to make the decisions that are best for the Houston Texans, and we'll work with anybody. Like, we're not, you're never going to, well, okay, this list of players are off limit, or list of agents or list of teams. Quite frankly, I think that's pretty parochial and narrow-minded to do business that way. So as long as we're in a position, you know, that we're in, that I'm in, then, you know, we'll be open-minded and do business and do what's best for the, always what's best for the Texans first and foremost.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I got to ask you about the tush push. And I'm not going to ask you directly about, you know,
no, I'm
whether
happy
it
to talk about
you.
It. I'm not going to look. I said something in front of the whole league as well. So nobody probably wanted to hear from me on it. But
well, there was one dynamic of it that I know that you're a little bit more privy to that was intriguing to me, was the fact that one of the two teams that's the best in the league at it, or at least their version of it, is the Buffalo Bills. And yet Sean McDermott was one of the guys that was against the tush push. Was that a surprise to you, or that he was against it?
I'm not going to comment about Sean. I would just say, when you look at the play in and of itself, and in the end, it's a version of a quarterback sneak, and the sneaks go back to a number of years, from how Brady runs it to how Josh Allen runs it to how Philadelphia runs it. And D'Amico and I have both commented publicly, so this isn't anything like groundbreaking information here, but you shouldn't penalize a team for a good execution. And it's not like all of a sudden, like, Hurts just dropped out of the sky and is playing quarterback. So the guy's been playing quarterback for 4 years. He's got over 4,000 snaps, 600 rushes. I don't know how many times they've run the sneak. So now, all of a sudden, like, we have an issue with the play. So, again, everybody has a different opinion, a different interpretation of it. But more than anything, what we should be doing is tip your hat to Stout and Nick for good execution. I mean, Jalen squats 6,000 pounds, so he's got good lower body strength. And when you actually look at the play, and I haven't done this, maybe we can have somebody out there in the Twitter sphere look at this, but the number of times where the player, whether it's in proximity or close to the quarterback, is actually pushed to create, you know, additional yardage, I mean, it probably doesn't happen on every play, because by the time, you know, the quarterback takes a snap and he's moving forward, it's more about what's going on the offensive line. So everybody has a different interpretation, but, you know, let's just go watch the play. You know, whatever happens moving forward, ultimately it's out of our control. I mean, it's something I think the owners and the competition committee will vote on. But, you know, is it, we're going to penalize players in the NBA for the Euro step? Like, that, we're going to make that illegal, even though, like, what's, so every situation, look, if you find something that works, okay, sometimes you just have to tip your hat to good execution, and to talk about health and safety on something where there's no data that actually, you know, try to create that, and that's the rationale behind it. you know, I think you got to be careful about that. So again, I've probably already said too much. I'll probably get fined for some of these comments. But, you know, that's what's
no, I mean,
everybody
you're basically
in Houston
saying
will be happy
league,
about it.
Yeah, you're basically saying the league should keep operating the way it's operating. They're not going to fine you for that. I think the part with McDermott that was interesting to me was that he cites the safety concerns, but doesn't, you know, there's not data that backs up that it's a dangerous play. The only thought I had about that part of it, and I don't think it should be banned either yet, is that I guess I could see as a coach looking at it, and if you think about a rugby scrum, the rugby scrum is safe if it's done the way it's supposed to be done, but it's also got potential for a lot of spinal injuries. Like, so when there are injuries in a rugby scrum, they're pretty severe injuries. And I wonder if at least part of it is people just thinking, all right, like, this looks like a train wreck about to happen, and maybe the data isn't there yet because there's not that many, but you also just don't want to, you don't want to invite the first couple injuries that are notable are drastic or severe injuries.
Seth, you're the rugby expert. I'm not, so I'm not really familiar with the nuances of rugby. But again, I would just say, I mean, this is something that, you know, Jalen's been playing quarterback for 4 years. So I guess the 4 years prior, that thought process, you know, wasn't an issue. So again, health and safety of the players in our league is of the utmost importance. Nobody's going to argue with that. So I just think you always just have to look at the information, take the data, and then, you know, just try to make good decisions. So whatever the league decides, they're going to decide. But, I mean, it's, you know, an interesting conversation, interesting topic. I would just say when you go back and look at even how Brady converted, I don't know, 90% of quarterback sneaks over the course of time. There are a number of times where, I mean, he was exposed. I mean, there was nobody on the center, and then he'd move forward. So theoretically, like, he was more exposed and potentially more of a safety risk than, you know, some of these other plays. I mean, even go back and look at whether it was a divisional round or whenever it was when we played the Ravens that year, when he reached the ball over the goal line on a sneak and fourth and one, and he ends up perpendicular to the ground, and then Lewis, you know, smacks him in midair and, you know, smashes his head right on the ground. So, I mean, is that not a safety risk? So, again, I think we just have to be careful of jumping to conclusions. Ultimately, do what's in the best interest of the players, absolutely. But, you know, I think we just got to continue to evaluate the actual play. And, you know, I'd say there's definitely a split camp on it. But, you know, I think you got to be careful about just making, you know, extrapolations based on, you know, what you think could happen. You know, nobody wants anything catastrophic to happen, to your point, that's for sure. But, you know, we'll see how it goes here moving forward.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us. I want to make sure we get some draft talk in before we cut you loose.
What's that?
The draft is coming up. It's in 3 weeks, and you're going to go find us some more good players just like you did last year. Four picks in the top 89. How are you feeling about the way this draft is unfolding relative to the amount of draft capital you have as compared to the needs that you have right now on the team?
Yeah, there's always opportunities. So top to bottom. So there's been years where we didn't have a first or second round pick, years we didn't have a first round pick. So what we try to do is just try to maximize our opportunities, try to understand a board as much as possible, top to bottom, you know, and then across as well at the various touch points and the various grade points. So our grading system may be a little bit different than some other grading system, but I think our job between now and the end of April is to understand and know as much about each player as possible. Understand what we have. The coaches have evaluated a number of players, so we're going to meet next week and kind of sit with the – we've kind of done it kind of in a one-off situation, but sit with the staff, kind of get their evaluation of the players, how they see the player, how they see the fit, how they see the role. So I would say the only thing that we, quote-unquote, need to do is draft good football players with the right mindset and the right mentality, regardless of the position that we play. So that's where our focus is. That's how we've approached it here the last 4 years. That's how we've approached it the last 2 years, specifically with D'Amico and I. And that's not going to change this year. So we're not going to all of a sudden do something different this year than we've done previous years. So no position is going to be off limits. Draft good football players. Look at the grade. Follow our board. Follow our process. And just get them in the building however we see fit.
Do you I get all that. Obviously, quarterback is a little bit of a different scenario. You've got CJ. The hope is he's your quarterback for a long, long time. Is your evaluation process and the amount of time you invest in that the same in a year where for a team that already has a quarterback as it would be in a year like 2 years ago when you were looking for a quarterback? Maybe just if for no other reason, the intel that you have on that player moving forward?
Specific, just saying, Sean, just drafting a quarterback or talking about a quarterback?
Evaluate. How much time you invest in evaluating quarterbacks, yeah.
You're still going to evaluate them because at some point, you know, and again, we're in a different situation, right? I mean, we hope CJ is a quarterback here for like, you know, 10, 15 years, whatever it is. So you're probably looking at, okay, the player behind them, right? Backup, third quarterback. Can you get a developmental player in the program? So again, but you're still going to evaluate in its entirety the entire. So we're going to know that position top to bottom as well. So understanding that there's going to be players that aren't going to be relevant. So I would say with the first, call it, three or four picks, other than quarterback, like any position is probably on the table, or it is on the table. So quarterback is kind of its own entity, but you just don't askew your evaluation and say, well, we're not going to look at that position. You still want to understand it. Who are the players? All right, they're going to fall in this particular spot or situation. Okay, this handful or however many, okay, they're probably non-factors, but this cohort over here, they may have some relevance. So you're not going to not evaluate a position just because you have one of the best quarterbacks or one of the best players at that position. I would say quarterback is kind of unique. You know, once you have a player that you feel good about for a long period of time, okay, like that's a good thing, but you're still going to go through your process and just understand all the positions across the board.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us here on Sports Radio 610. All right, Cena or Cody, Nick?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Cody.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Cody. I think Cena's done a nice job of pulling off this heel turn. So we'll see how long it lasts. So I'm going to go with Cody. Okay. In the end, it's up to Triple H. So whatever the hell he decides, it's probably what's going to happen.
But you can text him now. He's your close personal friend. If you want to book WrestleMania, you can at least help book WrestleMania.
I don't think he needs any input from me. So I think he's got it all. He has it figured out. So I'm only going to muck up the process. So
are you going to watch?
I'll go with Cody.
You're going to go with Cody?
I'm going to go with Cody. Am I going to watch? We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. I'm sure I'll see some tidbits. So I'll probably watch some Rockets playoff basketball before WrestleMania.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Hey, real quick on the Rockets, because you're obviously into all the sports teams from around here. I was thinking this last night, and I've thought this a lot with the Rockets. I feel like Ime Udoka and D'Amico Ryans have a lot of kindred spirit qualities. The Rockets feel like a very swarmy basketball team to me.
I would not want to mess with either one of them. So Ime's done a great job, and he did a great job in Boston. Ime's a really good coach. He's had a positive impact on the Rockets and the organization. You know, him and Rafael have done a really good job putting a really good team together, a number of good young players. They've played well this year to win 50 games in the NBA. I mean, that says a lot. So they put themselves in a pretty good position. The West kind of looks like it's pretty open this year, other than OKC. I mean, they clearly look like they're one of the best teams in the league. So, but they've positioned themselves really well. I'm sure the city's excited, as they should be. But, you know, great opportunity to watch some postseason basketball. I would say there is definitely a tangible difference in postseason basketball when everybody's trying to get through the regular season. But then when you get to the postseason, I mean, there's certainly an elevation in the play. But credit to them. It'll be a lot of fun to watch them play and continue to, make a push here. But they've done a really good job. He's a damn good coach. He's a really good coach. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Nick, I'm going to give you a hypothetical that it's 100% not going to happen. So you can answer freely. Okay, this is a draft question, but it's not going to happen. Okay, so don't feel like you have to be careful and not show your hand or anything.
Why don't you just talk about this on your YouTube channel?
Everybody should subscribe, and I know you watch all the time. So let's say Travis Hunter slides to 25 and you don't trade. You're not trading any, or you're just there at 25 and you decide to draft Travis Hunter. What role does he play his rookie year?
I'm happy to talk about Hunter as a player.
Yeah.
He's a very uniquely skilled athlete. I would say he looks like his best position is going to be corner, but I think if you ask 32 different, you know, teams, they might have a different opinion. But like what he's done is, I mean, even going back to Charles Woodson, Woodson played on both sides of the ball, but not the volume with which Travis has played. But talk about, here's a player who essentially nobody was talking about probably 2 or 3 years ago, you know, because he was at, you know, Jackson State, and, you know, Coach Prime did a great job of getting him there. But what he did this year, I mean, be hard-pressed to find another player probably in a near future that can duplicate what he's done. But I would say he looks like he's a better corner than he is a receiver. Not that he can't play receiver, but I mean, I would say he looks like corner. I mean, the way he plays the ball, attracts the ball, he's, you know, he's very unique. So I mean, there's
is
a
that
reason
one if he, you, like whoever drafts him, is that if you were to be one of the team, you know, if you drafted him, do you go into it kind of thinking, all right, we're going to start him on one side of the ball, and then we know that there's potential to do different things with him, but we got to nail one thing down first and then maybe see how much more he can handle after that?
You probably need to have a plan, say, look, we're going to start him here, and then as it goes, because again, even as a player, you know, that's hard when you're volleyballing back and forth, so you got to probably start somewhere, have a foundation, and then as it evolves, I mean, we've seen players kind of be used on both sides of the ball. I mean, going back to Vrabel, you know, in his role when he was playing on a goal line. So it happens. It hasn't happened a lot in the NFL with the volume with which that Travis played, you know, last year at Colorado. So it'll be an interesting, but nonetheless, he's one of the best players in the draft. You know, he's going to have a great career. You know, seems like he's a really good kid. You know, who's worked really hard to get to this point. So he deserves all the accolades that he's receiving.
Okay, real quick on this one, because we know we got to let you go. I really, really, really like Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan. But then I look at various anonymous scout quotes, and I've got one guy saying he's better than Mason Graham, and then I've got another guy saying he's the eighth best defensive tackle in the draft. Which one of those guys is correct?
The old anonymous quote. Season.
Yes.
This is where we are.
Yeah. We lean into this. Yeah.
Is it pretty much guaranteed that the guy who says he's the eighth best defensive tackle in the draft actually really wants to draft Kenneth Grant?
Yeah.
This is a massive amount of BS season. That's what this is. So I would say they're both good. They're both good football players. And when you watch the Michigan defense, you're not just watching one player. They play next to each other, so you can watch them during the course of the game. They're both really good players. They both have some things that they do well. They have some areas that they can certainly improve, but they're both good football players, and you know they're going to probably have a positive impact on whichever team drafts them next season.
All right, Nick.
Got it. I'm changing my mock draft.
Yeah, the mockaroo, the old P&P mockaroo just changed based
Mason
on that.
Mason Graham Nick. Drops to 25.
That's right.
I just heard.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have the text.
How many more hypotheticals are we going to get into?
Yeah. Nick, your willingness
to... is headed towards the station.
Yeah, that's right. Your willingness to talk about other sports has texts like this. Ask Nick if he's willing to help get a hockey team in Houston. No, I'm not going to ask him that, all right?
I would support that.
I know you would. Yeah, but I do. But you got to get
can
back
get
to
involved
work.
In the ownership group? Yeah, let me focus on football. Here,
there so. You go. There you go. Nick, we always appreciate how generous you are with your time. Appreciate all the insight. Go get them at the draft in a few weeks.
Thanks, fellas. Always good to visit with you.
You too. Appreciate it. Nick Caserio, Executive Vice President and GM, joining us on the show. Those are good. That was a good couple breadcrumbs at the end there, Seth, that you threw there. The Travis Hunter and the Kenneth Grant. That was good. I like that. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll circle back to some of the things Nick had to say. There is one thing in particular people are texting in. They're like, okay, well, clearly this is what's going to happen with something Nick had to say. Yeah, we'll get to that and a whole lot more from what we talked about with Nick coming up next.
Hey, everyone. Quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high-quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.